Hi, I'm Robin.
And I'm Chris. Together we're the Gen X couple.
Hey, guys.
Hello, everyone.
So today we have a very special guest with us, Jim Rice. And Jim wrote an amazing book, which I actually have in my hand, about his experiences growing up on Elm Street, which is in the middle of the Bridgewater Triangle.
Yep.
We did an episode of the Bridgewater Triangle, I think back in October for spooky season. And Jim had sent us a story for a follow-up episode that we did, which was listener stories from the Bridgewater Triangle. And Chris and I both read his book, which was fascinating. I'm going to link that in the show notes. And Jim, if you want to give a short introduction, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you for the introduction. I appreciate that. I'm Jim Rice. I grew up in Bridgewater from approximately 1974 to about 1994. I was there. I'm a graduate of Bridgewater Rainham, class of 1992, and I'm currently an English teacher.
Oh, I love that. Are you still local?
I live on Cape Cod now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I do get back to the Bridgewater area from time to time.
Yeah. I meant to ask you that before, and I forgot to ask you that. We're still very local. We can get to Bridgewater very easily. So.
Yes.
Yeah, we did check out Elm Street. We had walked up towards the Skim Milk Bridge not that long ago. I feel like it was after I got your original story. And, we had a little experience there. We'll get to that.
Yeah,
the Skim Milk Bridge, it's funny because nobody really knew about it back when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We only found out about it from some of the older kids in the neighborhood. And there were still people that I grew up with and chummed around with that they just weren't really outdoorsy, that never went out there. And I don't think my parents ever went out there. You know, just a lot of people didn't know about it. But then once the Bridgewater Triangle started to become a bit more popular, now I don't think there's anybody who researches it seriously and doesn't at some point visit the Skim Milk Bridge. I think it's kind of become sort of
one of the landmarks
as far as the triangle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So for those of you who didn't listen to the original episode, just a quick recap. The Bridgewater Triangle is a region in southeastern Massachusetts, and it's about 200 square miles or so. And the three points of the triangle are Abington, Rehoboth, and Freetown. But I feel like the Bridgewater Triangle has really expanded far beyond those three points. And the Bridgewater Triangle is known for all sorts of paranormal activity, UFO sightings, ghost sightings, phantom drumming, Bigfoot sightings.
My mom grew up in West Bridgewater, way, way back in the woods. And she said she's seen a thunderbird, and her parents always told her to be aware of quicksand.
Yeah, yeah. So you grew up on Elm Street, which is right in the heart of the Bridgewater Triangle. And we both read your book. Fascinating what you went through. And a few things we wanted to talk to you about. So since I already mentioned it, we'll start with this. So you had mentioned a guy who had been known for killing cats in a meadow on Elm Street in Bridgewater. So Chris and I had driven over, and we started to walk down the path towards the Skim Milk Bridge, which is right in the middle of the Hockomock Swamp. And we could hear cats, like all kinds of cats. And we looked, and this was, what, November?
Yep, November.
So there were no leaves on the trees. There wasn't really thick brush or anything. And we could hear cats, but we couldn't see cats. And then we were like, okay, are these phantom cats? So what do you know about the guy who supposedly killed cats on Elm Street?
So at some point long before I was alive, there was a rumor of a hermit who lived in this area that we called the Creepy Meadow, across from an old machine shop that we just referred to as the Green Building.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Building is still there. If anybody cares to drive down Elm Street, you'll see it. It's just a big corrugated metal building painted green. And across from it now is, I think, some sort of a trucking company. I think maybe at some point there might have been a Poland Springs or Simpson Springs in there. And what used to be there, if you can imagine this, was just a meadow about 5 acres, but it felt much, much bigger. Mm-hmm. It was a gently sloping hill when you were coming from the street, so you always kind of knew you were ascending toward it.
Okay.
It's mostly just waist-high grass, lots of briars, scraggly crabapple trees that look like something from a dark fairy tale, and a single dirt road that cut down between the trees and led to an old stone and mortar foundation, and supposedly that's where this fellow lived. There were some old, very old electric lines still going out there, and you could tell they were old because they were the kind that had the glass insulators on the top. I know some of the local kids turned the foundation into sort of a fort and put some lumber and plastic across the top, but that didn't really seem to last very long. And behind that area was a pond that we always just called Gilbert's Pond, after the woman who lived across the street next to the green building. And, you know, so, strangely enough, I don't know too much about the fellow there. You know, there were some wires still that didn't look to be electrical wires. And some of the local kids said, oh, yeah, you know, that guy, you know, that's where he would hang the animals from. He would hang the cats from that wire right there. And, you know, anything that crossed on his property, you know, he would just kill them. And I don't know if that could just be little kids telling, you know, fairy tales to scare each other. But it definitely, the area had a sort of interesting vibe. And just a quick little side story. In that pond, we had a makeshift raft. And I think it was just some planks across an old, a few old tires that we had lashed together. And we would use a pole to get across. And one day we were kind of pulling our way across this pond, and something that popped up to the surface of the water that we thought was an arm. And it looked like an arm. It looked like a thickness of a human arm without the hand. And it really stank like a dead body. And we were convinced that that's what it was. And we didn't want to tell anybody yet because we were thinking that, like, we'd made this, like, grisly discovery, and we wanted to be sure and not embarrass ourselves. And my dad, he was a police officer. So that night I sort of, like, sneakily asked him, like, hey, Dad, you know, I'm just curious, what does a dead body look like after it's been in the water for a while? And he pretty much described what we were seeing. It was really bloated and pale and the smell and all that. And we were like, man, we found a dead body. And I remember someone picked the thing up and brought it out into the neighborhood where some kids were playing a pickup football game, and it smelled so bad that everybody just went home and got angry about the smell. And one day we were out there and we were pulling around, and probably about 8 or 10 more body parts popped up.
Yeah.
And we were like, man, we found some sort of a killing ground or a burial ground.
God.
And then one of our friends was digging around the edge of the pond, and he found this thing that was a root. And it looked just like what we had been finding, except it wasn't rotted because it wasn't under the water. And it turned out to be just some sort of an aquatic plant. but being Elm Street, it probably wouldn't have surprised us any more than if it had been a bunch of dead bodies buried in and around the pond.
Right, right. Which is, I know I said this to you before we started the interview, but that's another one of the most Gen X things. Because what other generation can just go out into the woods and potentially find body parts?
Yeah.
That's, you know, kids, like, our kids are not doing stuff like that, you know, child.
Well, in my book, I mentioned, and that's actually the same pond. I mentioned how, you know, I remember one occasion we were out goofing around on there in the winter and sort of testing the ice, and some older kids were out there with rifles. They made us do push-ups in the slushy ice, started shooting the ice around us saying, come on, do it faster. And at one point, one of the guys said, you know, I think I hear my mom calling me. So they let us go. We never told them about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So much that our parents didn't know about back in the 80s. Oh, my gosh. So I'm going to change the subject a little bit because I want to ask you about the night people. In your book, you had mentioned that you had seen the night people, and you were about 6, I believe, if I remember correctly. Was it just a one-time thing, or have you seen them again, or had you seen them again after the initial sighting?
You know, I never again saw anything that looked like that as far as people wearing old-timey clothing.
Okay.
But there were some other instances where my friends and I thought we saw what at the time we didn't know, but now we know are called shadow people.
Yeah,
Where it was just movement, where a couple of times we were exploring different areas. One particular instance comes to mind. We were down by the prison, And there's this really kind of creepy road to nowhere that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were exploring this area because a friend's parent said that she had gone out there, and there were some rumors around the area where, you know, supposedly nobody had ever made it down the whole road at night, you know, lived to tell the tale. So we, of course, had to go and try our luck. And we were out there, and several of us saw what looked like people walking across the trail in front of us and then sort of like ducking down and hiding behind a tree. And I didn't want to alarm the girls that we had with us. And I said, you know, this is boring. Let's just go back. And one of the girls was actually a foreign exchange student. And I'm like, she must just think we're nuts. So I said, yeah, you know, let's go back. And then when we got back to the car, one of the guys that was there said, you know, I don't understand. Like, why did you turn around so quickly? I thought the whole point was to do the whole path. And I said, well, I saw something and it kind of freaked me out. And I didn't want to drag these girls into it. And he said, what did you see? And I described it. And he and another person in the group said, I thought I saw something too, but I didn't want to say anything because, you know, it's dark out.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure exactly what I saw, but it was around the same time. So, you know, I just want to state, you know, I always try to look for the logical explanation and sort of look through a skeptic's lens. And there are some experiences that I had when I was a kid that I can kind of rationalize away, but there's the ones in the book are the things that I just don't really have a good explanation for.
Yeah.
And that's why I put them in the book.
But
I could have filled it with a lot of other things, you know, strange screams and other strange things that we saw on the street. But as you get a little bit older and you start to look back on some of those things, I was able to at least come up with an alternate explanation for some of it.
Right.
So I didn't put those things in the book.
Right. Which kind of leads me to ask, do you think you're haunted, or do you think you have a gift? Like, do you have any medium-esque qualities? Because it seems like a lot of things are happening to you. I know in the book you said there was a taxidermied moose head that turned and looked at you. And then the puppets, which we'll get into. But, like, you've seen things not just at your house. Yeah, the phantom hand that you had seen at Jennifer's house.
Mm-hmm.
Things are happening to you elsewhere. Do you think that's because it's the Bridgewater Triangle? Or do you think, for some reason, these things are just showing themselves to you specifically?
I really don't have an answer for that.
Okay, fair enough.
I can try to answer it.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Because a lot of the experiences that I had, I was with other people.
Right.
And some of them were hardcore skeptics and then kind of changed their minds after. You know, it's hard not to when you're confronted with something you can't explain.
Right in your face, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't really know any reason why someone as young as I was back then would be haunted, but I do think that children are sensitive to those sort of things. And
yeah, I agree.
They haven't been educated to the point that they're told not to believe in those things. And, you know, later they get their imaginations educated out of them, and and they kind of get told, you know, hey, that those things don't exist. So I don't know. I wouldn't really say that I was sort of haunted. I wouldn't also say that I'm psychic. I've had a few premonitions and dreams and sort of sensations, I guess you could call it, from time to time, that intuitions or something that proved to be accurate and kind of kept me out of harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more of an empath than a psychic.
Okay.
You know,
fair.
Sort of more sensitive to things, and, you know, maybe whatever's out there kind of recognizes people who will pay attention.
That you're open to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So have your experiences, now that you're an adult, died down? Do you still have any experiences?
I do still have experiences from time to time. Nothing like before, because I don't spend, unfortunately, that amount of time out in the
in
woods.
A swamp,
the way
right.
And I mentioned this in the book, too. Like, we were just so close to nature. You know, we would spend hours and hours and hours out there. And sometimes, you know, it makes me sad now when I hear about parents who sort of ground their children inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, ground them by sending them outside, because the kids would prefer to stay inside.
Right.
But
no, that's true.
We always wanted to be out and about.
Yeah.
You know, that was the Gen X thing.
That's how we lived our lives back then. First thing in the morning, and you didn't come back home until the streetlights were on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And our parents had no idea where we were.
And we didn't know how good we had it either. Because, seriously. You know, now I look back on it and I'm like, we had the world in our hands. Yeah, that was paradise.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can remember getting up on Saturday mornings and just crack of dawn, I would be out the door heading to my friend's house, and we'd be out working on a tree fort or exploring the swamp or trying to build a raft or something. And since you asked about more modern things, I've had a couple of experiences. One actually took place when I was traveling through Scotland with some friends a few years back, and I knew before I left for this trip, it was around 2018, that my aunt was sick. And I saw her before I left, but I don't know, maybe about the third or fourth day of the trip, I just got this really heavy feeling, sad feeling. And my aunt didn't even really pop in my head. I just kept thinking, like, why am I getting this, like, weird sensation that, like, I just want to go home. And I'm in this place that I've wanted to visit for years. We were heading to Loch Ness, is the place I'd read about since I was a kid.
Yes.
And I should have been so up, you know, and excited and on top of the world. But I just felt like something was wrong. So after another day or two, I just couldn't stand it. So I called my mom and she told me that my aunt had passed away, and she didn't want to ruin my good time. So, you know, I felt really bad, and I offered to come back, but she insisted, you know, there's nothing to really do at that point. But then before I got off the phone, I said, well, when did she actually die? And she told me, you know, whatever, this 3 days ago, 4 days ago. And I kind of did a ballpark in my head, and I said, that's just around the time I started to sense this thing was off. So that's not even the whole story. A day or two after, we were visiting a cafe, and this was in Isle of Skye, Scotland. It's a really beautiful but sort of desolate place as far as, you know, houses and the towns are few and far between. And this cafe had some books for sale, and my friends were mostly up at the front of the store looking for coffee and some food, and I was looking around at the books, and I happened to pick up a book about hauntings in Scotland. And as I was looking at it, I felt a very distinct tapping on my shoulder, like, come on, and let's go. You know, we were going hiking, and I said, yeah, hold on a minute. And I finished reading the back of the book jacket, and then I turned around and I realized where I was standing was between these rows of shelves, and they were really long rows, and the nearest friend was all the way across the store, and there's no way that they could have made it past me and around me without me seeing them. And later I even asked them, I said, you know, was anybody, you know, on that side? I didn't notice. And then they said, no, what are you talking, why? And they noticed, like, there was something different, like, maybe I turned pale or something, because they said, you don't look right, like, you look like you're sick. And I said, I just felt someone poke me, like, really hard. And I had to, before I left, I asked the person working at this little cafe, I said, has anyone here ever reported any hauntings here? And, like, ghostly activity, and my friends just sort of groaned, like, oh, God, here he goes. And the person said, yeah, actually, we have lots of reports here. People seeing shadow people will come in the next day after closing up, and there's, like, a door open or unlocked or a light on when it shouldn't be. And he said that lots of people had experiences there. So I was like, okay, that, you know, that was an interesting experience.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah, I did have an experience where I live now, one day when I was just relaxing, watching TV, and all of a sudden a hall light came on, and I thought, oh, that's kind of weird. You know, sometimes you go to flick a light switch off and it stays in the middle and maybe moves a little on its own. So I went back, shut off the light, went back to the couch, sat down, and I was watching TV. And a second later, the light came on again. Then my basement door creaked open, and then a picture that was hanging on the wall flipped over.
Oh my God.
And it all kind of happened one after the other. And, you know, taking any one of those things individually, I could come up with an explanation for, but to have them happen like that, you know, someone said, you know, I was telling someone about it, and they said, well, was there an earthquake? And I said, an earthquake doesn't turn the lights on. But, you know, it's just like some interesting little things like that, where couple of times I have a couple of rescue cats, and, you know, late at night sometimes they act a little crazy. But one night in particular, I remember one of them standing up on his back legs almost like a prairie dog and just stare like stair in the corner of the room, and there's nothing in the corner of the room.
Right.
And I was on the second floor, and he just was up on his back legs, so intently staring in the corner of the room. And then I finally said, "Hey, if there's anybody here, you're bothering my cats. Like, don't do that. Go away." And the cat just jumped and ran under the bed and was cowering under the bed and didn't want to come out. And then a little while later, he sort of came out on his own. And actually, as I'm talking right now, the lights just flickered.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Nobody else is going to see this video, but we saw it on our end too. Wow. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild. So actually, what was that section of Scotland you mentioned that was a little isolated?
Isle of Skye.
I've got to write that down. We're planning a trip to Scotland next year in 2026, so we'll have to add that to our list.
Isle of Skye is it's beautiful. And if you get a chance to visit like the Orkney Islands, really, really cool out there. I think it's called Scarabray.
Okay.
It's this really ancient civilization that they discovered on Isle of Skye that's thousands and thousands of years old. And there's the architecture, interestingly enough, really resembles the architecture on Easter Island.
Okay.
I thought that was really kind of cool. Not with the giant heads, but just like the giants.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to add that to our list. Thank you. So you had mentioned you were in Scotland with friends, but I want to go back to your childhood friends, the Nightmares, which I love that you guys had your own name. Do you still talk to any of them? It was what? Patrick, Derek.
Yeah.
Who else? Who am I forgetting? But do you still talk to any of your childhood friends that you explored the swamp with?
Well, not so much. We kept in touch, you know, pretty well through our 20s and early 30s. And
then people started,
life happens. Yeah. People married and had kids. Unfortunately, my friend Phil that I dedicated the book to, he passed away. I think probably going about 8 years now.
Wow.
And he actually had moved back to Elm Street, and I kind of considered him like the Prince of Elm Street because he was to that area. And you know, that kind of also pulled the friend group apart a little bit because, you know, he was kind of our common denominator at that point.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know, I'll still talk to some people here and there. You know, there were like the original group of Nightmares, like the ones who lived on the street. And then there were kind of our honorary Nightmares who came in later on from other neighborhoods. And I was happy. Unfortunately, we got nothing but rain, but we did, a couple of us did camp out in the Hockomock, on an island last summer.
I love that.
Yeah. So that was our first time actually camping all night. You know, usually we'd be in a treehouse or something, but we paddled out there with some tents and, you know, I'm hoping to do it again this summer or spring. You know, when it's not high mosquito season and hopefully some good weather, because we just kind of wanted to sit out there all night and see if we heard anything or experienced anything. But it was just nothing but like solid rain.
That's a huge bummer. Of course. The night you guys go to do that, of course it rains.
Right.
That's a huge bummer. But you guys spent a lot of time in the Hockomock Swamp, and I know you had built a fort, and I know in the fort, Little Choppy, which was your ex, had gone missing. Did you ever find Little Choppy?
So
I know it came back, but then I think it disappeared again.
Yeah.
So as I recall, the larger ex, the bigger one, Big Choppy, disappeared completely, and we just never saw it again. I think the smaller one did come back, and then kind of go the way of the big one again. You know, it's sort of hard to keep track. I remember one of them popping up again, and then we hit it in a different location. That one vanished. It was strange because I was the only one with the key. You know, we had glass windows at the time. We looked around, and I mean, is it possible that someone could have pulled a board off and gone through the trouble of nailing it back there? Yeah, anything's possible, I suppose, but it just seemed like a lot of effort for what. And at that time, actually, we were I don't think there were even a lot of older kids in the neighborhood anymore. I think they had all sort of aged out and moved on with their lives, and there was really no reason to mess with a couple of younger kids at that point.
Okay, well then, since we talked about Little Choppy, Big Choppy, this seems like a good spot for me to ask you about the machete that you mentioned you guys had as middle school-aged children in the book. And I said to you before we started the interview that that's the most Gen X thing I've ever heard in my entire life. How the heck did you get a machete at that age?
Well, this might be surprising, too, given that that my dad was a cop, but I was always into outdoorsy stuff. So he used to give me pocket knives at a pretty young age.
Okay,
and I used
that's
to
fair.
Collect them. And, you know, until I was maybe 12 or 13 or so, those pocket knives stayed in the house 99% of the time. And, you know, I might grab one to go fishing or if we were going to go all day in the swamp. But around the time that the movie Rambo came out, I started begging my dad for a survival knife.
Okay.
And he actually went and eventually picked one up for me at Bananas.
I've been there.
I'll never forget when he came home with that. I was so excited. But before that, I picked up like a $15 machete from, I think, the Rainham flea market. And we used to bring that out in the woods with us a lot. And we'd use it to clear brush for forts and go bushwhacking and chop firewood and all that other stuff. So most of the time we kept those things out in the fort or in our houses. But, you know, they did make it out of the house from time to time, especially if we're going out like late at night. Eventually, I'm going to have to share some stories about Camp Tittiget, which was also a very, very creepy place. And when we went there, because we had heard a lot about cult activity, we brought everything from bows and arrows to machetes to knives and anything that we could find, because we were just, you know, pretty convinced that we were going to run afoul of some sort of satanic cult and we would have to defend ourselves.
Yeah,
thankfully, that never happened.
There was a huge satanic panic back in the 80s. Yeah. Those of us who were there remember. So I just got a pop-up saying we had 10 minutes left in the meeting, by the way. So I have to ask you before we wrap up about the puppets. Your dad had found them at a yard sale in Maine.
Yes.
And then you guys brought these puppets back to your house in Bridgewater, and they terrorized you. So where are the puppets still around, or did they eventually make it into the trash? Because last we know as your readers, they were in the attic, running around in the attic.
So the puppets are probably still around somewhere, but not around me, thankfully. I did eventually sell them at a yard sale.
Oh, okay. So now they're terrorizing someone else.
Right. So this is the weird thing, too. So I had a friend who was really into horror movies, and when I was like, after I found out that my parents kept them, I found out because I happened to be at the dinner table and I said, you know, it's too bad you got rid of those puppets. My friend's into horror movies and special effects, and he wants to buy them from me. And they kind of looked at each other, and that I was like, wait a minute, what's going on? And they said, well, they're still in the attic. And I was like, all those times you lied to me, they could have been tap dancing on the ceiling of the attic, you know, like, on the floor of the attic above my bedroom.
Yeah, because you heard
that's
them.
When it really kind of hit me that I maybe wasn't completely insane. So I looked and looked for them, and they weren't there. But years later, when my parents were moving, I went up, I was pulling stuff out of this attic crawl space, and there was a bag sitting right next to the door. I opened them up, and I think my heart stopped.
I bet.
Where the puppets were. And when I did sell them at the yard sale, I told the person who bought them, I said, these things freak me out so bad. and it just it's so weird just like thinking about having them in my room. That, like, your room when you're a kid, it's sort of like your little sanctuary.
Exactly, yeah.
All your worldly possessions are in there, but there was just this strange artificial stillness. It's sort of like when you see a person at a wake and you kind of feel like it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
It's too still, like an unnatural stillness, but you also kind of feel like they could just pop up at any time.
Right.
That's kind of how I felt with the puppets, where, you know, if I was in my room, it was so quiet I could almost hear my own heart beating, and they would just be sort of dangling there, and I'd see like the dust swirling and the sunbeams coming through the window, and it felt like I was underwater and I couldn't breathe, and then all of a sudden they'd start swaying and for no reason. The window wasn't open.
I
didn't want them to touch me, just like the thought of like reaching towards them to get into my desk and one of them would bump me, and it just freaked me out. you know, I think my brother was pretty happy when we finally got rid of them too, because I would wake up and screaming, and he would be like, you know, what's going on? He said he sees something. And, you know, there were other toys in our room too that I saw moving around from time to time. I saw a coonskin cap, my brother's coonskin mm-hmm. cap, Davy Crockett hat,
yep.
like across the top of a dresser and jump onto the floor.
Oh, God.
And when I screamed and my parents came in, that's where it was on the floor. Right. And my brother, like, he didn't want to share a room with me anymore. And he was older. He was like, I want out. Yeah. And I don't blame him.
I don't blame him. Yeah. I don't blame him either.
Do you happen to have any pictures of the puppets?
You know, I don't. Okay. I don't know if my parents do, but I definitely do not have any pictures of them. Okay. At one point when I was a kid, I had this old Grim fairy tale book, and there was a picture in there, like a sketch that almost looked like the older looking puppet. So I could probably find something that looks comparable to how they look, but I don't have the pictures of the actual
puppets. Okay. So we're going to start wrapping it up, because I keep getting notices from Zoom that they want us to end. They just don't want us to talk to you anymore. Do you have any closing thoughts before we do wrap it up? Anything you wanted to add? You're going to be working on another book?
Well, I'm tentatively hopefully working on a sequel that focuses on some stuff that happened at the same time, but off Elm Street.
Okay, cool. Which
Camp Titicket is one.
Yep.
I've got a sort of rough idea for a children's book that's completely unrelated to everything else. About the triangle. And I also have a novel that I'm kind of working on at the same time.
Okay, excited to read it.
Yeah, it's sort of based on some of the stuff from the Street Diaries, but you know, I'll just close by saying, you know, if people go out there, just to be careful, because mm-hmm. you know, there are spots out there that resemble quicksand, and it's easy to turn around and get lost.
Yes.
You know, people still debate what's the cause of all this, whether it's a curse or a portal or a dimension or some different life levels or whatever you want to call it. I'd like to think that, you know, if anything, there's definitely like an essence, there's some sort of a residue, whether it's a psychic impression of things that got left behind, you know, with the emotional impact of history, King Philip's war.
Yes.
But there's also something that seems to be sentient and sometimes mischievous and playful. I think there's a lot more at play than just like a single spirit.
Yeah.
And possibly even more than human spirits. There seems to be something out there that's far, far older than people. And it's just, there's just so much that we don't know about the world. I think that's a good thing. I think curiosity is one of the best traits a person can have.
And I agree.
Children have curiosity in spades, and that just really sparked my imagination when I was a kid and helped me to kind of become the person that I am. And I think the world would be boring if we did have all the answers, but it is fun searching for them. It's fun speculating.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
I do challenge people, too, that are skeptical and say, you know, that's a bunch of hogwash, because typically when I have a conversation with people like that, I'll ask them, like, how much time did you spend in the swamp? And they'll say, well, you know, I went out there once. And it's like, okay, well, that's not much. And I've heard people say, like, I hunted out there, you know, for many, many years. Well, I spent almost every single day of my childhood out there, and I never saw a hunter.
Right.
I saw hunters walking around the peripheral of the fields, but in the deep parts of the swamp, we never saw another human being, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of those deeper parts. So, you know, who's to say like where they were or whether they were even open to having an experience or whether they would recognize it if they did.
Right.
So I do challenge people to go out there and try to spend time out there. But usually when I tell people who are skeptics and I say, why don't you go out there and spend the night and see what happens? Oh no, I would never do that. I say, well, why not? And it's because it's creepy. And what are you so afraid of? So I understand why people are skeptical, and I do think that's a good thing, because I think that some people do jump to a lot of conclusions where every speck of dust is an orb and a spirit, and every strange sound is a ghost. And I don't believe that's true either. So just going in with an open mind and you know, try to figure out if you can you know, find alternate explanations and don't jump to conclusions. But
Yes.
You know, I personally do think there's something out there, and
we agree.
Anybody claims they have the answers, I think they're just full of it. Yeah. You know, nobody has the answers.
We completely agree. And we're about to time out, so I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is going up on Thursday. And I'll be in touch because I need a picture from you to post on social media. So I'm going to email you after this. So thank you so much for doing this. This was amazing.
Thank you. Thank you both.
And have fun in the swamp if you go back out again this summer. thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
All right. Thank you. Bye. So huge thank you to Jim for being on the podcast today. We can't even tell you guys how much we appreciate
it. We could have talked to him all day about this. Everything is so interesting.
It's so interesting. The Hockomock Swamp is just electric. If you guys are in the area and you ever have a chance to just go for a walk through the swamp, like heading down towards the Skim Milk Bridge, do it, because you guys will know exactly what I mean when I say that. And you might even hear
a cat.
You never know.
And let us know.
Yeah, please let us know. But again, huge, huge thank you to Jim. I apologize from the bottom of my heart that it got cut short. We were having major technical difficulties on our end, but I think we pulled it off for the most part.
Yep.
So next week, we've got some life hacks for you guys. Tune in next Thursday, every Thursday. And check out the link to Jim's book. You guys, it's a fairly easy read.
Yep, and it's a short read.
It's a short read, but it's a good read. And you guys read it and you'll understand more about what we were talking about with him in the interview. Definitely go check it out. And
until next week, see you later, alligator.
He cut me short. I was going to say something else, but forget it now. In a wild crocodile.